To be or not to be? That is the question we address next on Garden Talk. With apologies to the bard, I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is Wisconsin Public Radio. And to help us answer the question of adding a beehive to our garden, we have asked bee expert Charlie Charby Keenan to join us today. He is the president of the Milwaukee Waukesha Beekeepers Association. He's executive director of Beevangelists and founder of Bee Pods. He's also a former state bee inspector. What questions do you have about adding bees to your garden? Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Stay with us. Oh, I'm sorry. Don't stay with us or don't leave because we're gonna stay here. Hi, Charlie. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Jill. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, we're so happy you were able to spend a little time with us. And like I said, you know, I had a listener ask me about bees and beehives and got me to thinking, is it a good idea for a gardener to have a beehive in their garden? So I thought I'd go to an expert, and obviously that's you. So let's start with that question and maybe go on and ask some others. But is it a good idea to have a beehive in your garden?
Well, urban beekeeping is a big deal these days, has gotten bigger and bigger. But difficulty in keeping bees has also grown as we've all become aware of their importance and need. It's kind of an iffy question. It's a lot of work to be a beekeeper and to host honeybees, but honeybees aren't the only ones. There are native pollinators too. And these days, one of the things that we kind of talk about is if you really want to help bees, just have a great garden full of native food and they'll find it.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go through all that trouble of keeping bees because it is a lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah, well, at the Milwaukee Waukesha Beekeepers Club, we have a yard at the Hunger Task Force Farm out in Franklin. And so you can join the club and jump into a bee suit and come and play with the bees. And I think that's the best way to get started, to realize just how much work there is, how much responsibility there is, particularly in an urban situation where you've got as many as 50,000 head of cattle, right, of livestock in your backyard, and you have a responsibility to your neighbors and neighborhood to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And in these dog days coming up where it's super duper hot, a lot of times you don't want to put on that snowmobile suit and go out into the garden and work on those bees, but you have to because it's your livestock.
Sure.
So to get people to understand that that's the responsibility that they have for the privilege of being able to interact with these awesome insects is kind of what we're about with the Bee Club and what we do with Beevangelists. Get people into the yard, let them see what it's about, let them see how heavy things are, how hard things are to work with, but also how fascinating bees are.
Well, and that's a great way to do it because you really don't know what you're getting into. I mean, I think all gardeners have thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a beehive and how wonderful and romantic that would be. I could have my own honey and blah, blah, blah. But like you said, you can have the native bees doing all that work for you and you don't have to do anything but provide them with some beautiful flowers.
And then enjoy the diversity and complexity of all of the visitors to those flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really start getting into it, you can start to see that if you plant certain flowers, you attract certain types of bees. So if you like the bumblebees, there are some that they like. If you like those green iridescent bees, there are definitely native flowers that will attract more of those. And of course, honeybees, well, they'll jump on just any kind of a flower that's around. That's kind of why we made them such an important part of our agricultural model.
Mm-hmm. And diversity is important, obviously. Yeah. So if someone says, okay, well, that sounds great, Charlie, but I'm really obsessed. I want to be a beekeeper. I want a hive. And I've heard about these flow hives. They're supposed to be really simple. Is that a good solution?
Well, flow hives certainly did make a splash in the market when they came on in 2015. They were one of the biggest. I think they actually crashed the Indiegogo website with the amount of business that they got within a 24-hour period. Mind you, 2015 was when we were at the height of the bee collapse and the missing, are we all going to die from bees or something like that? So flow hives are a really neat idea that had an interesting marketing technique that I think caught everybody at offhand. So they kind of got a bad rap in the beginning just because their marketing sort of said, you can have bees in the backyard. You don't have to do anything except run out there with pancakes on a plate and put them underneath the hive and get your honey. And beekeepers didn't like that because we're really concerned about inspecting the hive, making sure that the bees are taken care of. So flow hives have fixed that. And so I think the bad rub for them is not around as much anymore. One thing that I have noticed in our four season area is that when you pick up a new flow hive, it takes a couple of years, a couple of seasons of the bees interacting with the new gadgetry that allows the harvesting to be so easy before it actually works right. So a lot of times you'll see people will buy it, not have any success with it, and get rid of it before they've had a chance to really get it to work. So I still think that there are other ways of doing it that work a little bit better, but certainly it's proven itself as being a viable option.
And for those not familiar, just explain it really quickly how it works.
Sure. So one of the more difficult or more costly parts of beekeeping is getting the honey out of the hive, right? Getting the bees out of the way and then getting the honey in frames out to a place where you can extract it. And so extractors or centrifuges, things that spin the honey around and get the honey to flow off to the sides and into buckets, can get very, very expensive. And so what this young man and his father in New Zealand discovered was a way to create hives that have an extraction capability just by changing the way the honeycomb shape moves so that it actually turns into a river that will pour out of a little tube on the back of the hive. So rather than having to take apart the hive and bring the honey into a honey house or a your kitchen or wherever, you can extract it right out the back of the hive. There are some cautions around it. It's got to be a warm day. It's got to be a decent day to work with. You have to kind of cover up so that the bees going in and out of the front door don't notice it in the back and start to hang around there. But when you follow all the directions right, it's a nice way of being able to collect some honey, a couple of jars at a time, as opposed to having to take one of those big boxes like the ones behind me, into a house or into your bee house or
And for
honey
those
house.
listening on the radio, they're quite large. They're like bunny hutches. So for those who can't see it, we're talking on Zoom here today. But what about the winter time? I mean, is that a problem for those type of hives?
Not necessarily. If you
Okay.
follow the directions, it works okay.
Okay.
All bees are struggling with winter, but we're struggling with them for a different reason. It's not necessarily the struggle that the flow hives have. So this plastic device that they have made that helps the honey flow out the back and make the extracting of honey or the harvesting of honey easy in a flow hive is something that you remove entirely during the wintertime because the bees can't live inside of that. It's only for extraction purposes.
Okay.
And so one of the things that we've learned here in a four season climate is that it's not a bad idea to put a second brood box or the box where the bees live in above or underneath the flow hive. So the flow hive itself is a place where bees live, like any beehive. And then the flow hive itself is this box that goes on top that has this special gadgetry that makes the harvesting of honey easy. So that part has to be removed in the wintertime. And
Okay.
with any of the hives, we generally take the honey boxes and shrink it down and try and give them a small a house as we can, and then insulate it quite a bit so that they can kind of work with the temperature fluctuations up and down and be able to create enough heat to keep mom and themselves alive until spring.
Okay. We do have a phone call here from Dave in Appleton. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have a small lawn. I'd like to change into a bee lawn. I thought maybe I would use a Roundup product and kill all of the weeds. several times before winter if necessary, and then spread some biosolids or milorganite on it and then throw the seeds on top. If this would work, I had heard that the best time to do it is just before the first snow or very late in the freezing season. And the other thing is, did I understand you to say that using a Roundup product or a product like that, that you would also be killing the seeds that are in the soil so that they don't come up?
Well, Dave, I think maybe you were listening to Neil DeBull, who was our guest beforehand, who was talking about planting native lawns on that. So I don't know, Charlie, do you have much background on...
Well, Neil is great, and Prairie Nurseries is mm-hmm. the place to buy the seeds and to get the information. We use them with a number of our clients, and we use their stock. Roundup is an efficient way. It's also you also can do well by just bagging or tarping over the area, and then you don't use as lethal a product as the Roundup. Roundup can work, but it's got some bad side effects that hurt some of the way insects uptake food and nutrition. That's kind of how it kills plants, mm-hmm. is it makes it so that the plants can't hold on to or absorb the nutrients that they would have to thrive, just kind of cuts it off, and that's how they die. Unfortunately, our gut microbes and insect gut microbes also work that way.
Yeah, Dave, I would suggest that you can contact Prairie Nursery. Take a look at their website. They've got all kinds of info out there for you to check out. So go ahead and do that.
For anybody, good luck.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Dave. If you've got a question about beekeeping, give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can send an email to talk@wpr.org, as did Shaharia. She emailed us, given the environmental and economical value of beehives, is there a reliable source in Wisconsin where we can get advice regarding problems with beekeeping?
Well, the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Protection, DATCAP, has a website, datcap.org, and they have a whole section dedicated to pollinators and a subsection on honeybees. Wisconsin's one of the leading honey producers and pollinator states in the country, so we have a pretty extensive area there. The University of Minnesota has the Bee Lab, which is internationally famous with information about protecting bees and what you can do with bees. And then I would suggest local organizations like the Milwaukee Waukesha Beekeepers Club, or up there in Appleton, I think, I can't remember, Lake County, I think, it has a beekeeping association. If you go to, or if you look up WisconsinHoneyProducers.org, they have our state broken down into regions with bee clubs with the dates that you can come, and they're free to attend, and they're usually pretty fun. And there you can find mentors or activities or information that would be site specific right for you in Appleton.
Okay. And Alan in Madison has a question. Go ahead, Alan.
Yes. My brother-in-law had bees for years and years, and he has recently just stopped having them because it was too much work for him. He's retired and not in great health. And I've been thinking about bees and promoting bees because they're so beneficial. What if you have a beehive and you don't harvest? Is that even feasible?
The idea of a laissez-faire approach to bees and beekeeping, I think, has gone away 20 years ago and has been proven by the losses that we've been sustaining repeatedly over and over again. It's getting harder and harder to keep them because of biological threats, because of threats from humans, because of threats from our changing or sporadic or chaotic climate. So I think it's hard to jump into it and say I just want to leave things alone. The other thing that's important, especially if you're in an urban environment, is to understand that the idea of honey production is not just food for the bees, it's insulation for thermal regulation. Honey slows down heat when it's applied. So when the hot sun's on top of the hive, it takes less of that heat inside the hive because the honey is absorbing the energy. Likewise, in wintertime, when it's really cold, the ball of bees in the center can remain warm because they're insulated by a blanket of honey. So leaving the honey on is a good idea, but if you leave too much honey on and the house becomes full, the bees will franchise their operation to find another warehouse. Bees' job in nature is to pollinate, is to make more flowers around. And in that exchange, they get nectar that they turn into honey. If they fill their house, then they make another warehouse down the road. So it's important for us to understand as beekeepers that we have to take some honey away from them. We always have to try and keep their house one brick from being done. And that's just gotten harder to do because the temperature and climate and conditions have made it not as easy a pattern to recognize as it used to.
Mm-hmm. What about someone who's maybe interested in having a hive, but not necessarily about being its, you know, owner? So are there beekeepers that, you know, put their hives in different other people's property, put it that way?
There sure are. And you can reach out to your local bee club. So go through the Wisconsin Honey Producers website and go to your local bee club and put it out there. And depending on what you have for forage and the accessibility to the hives. So it's important when you start thinking about those big, tall stack boxes around that they have a way to be able to get in and out with heavy boxes of honey or with abundant boxes of bees. So if you've got it, a big enough piece of property with enough good forage and roads driving in or a way that a beekeeper can get to the back to where the bees will be, then you may find a couple of beekeepers that will want to barter with you for the opportunity to be on your property. Usually it just means you'll get a few jars of honey and the fun of being able to see it's out there.
And I think that's pretty good payment.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely.
The best honey is your own backyard.
Absolutely. And we had been chatting earlier this week about the fact that urban honey actually tastes better because it has so much input. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting thing. Back in the early 2000s when urban beekeeping started to become something because of the colony collapse starting, we started noticing something that urban hives were getting more honey and were getting a larger amount of honey over time. When you're out in the country where everybody thinks that's where we should put it out in the farm fields, et cetera, there are flows because when a plant that's in production is flowering, the flowering is only for a couple of weeks. And the rest of the time it's making a raspberry or making a melon or making a something else. And there's no food for the bees. So if you have multiple forages around, you may have multiple flows of honey. But in the city, there's always something in bloom. Everybody's got hanging baskets. There are the park systems. There are the median strips. There's all that drive in between along the side of the freeways that are always with something in bloom. So we have a permanent flow. And so the amount of honey that you get is exponentially more than what you get out in the country. And because of the diversity of taste and flavor, you can get some very unique or very powerfully nice flowers. The other thing that's kind of neat about it, too, is if we talk about it for helping with your sneezing and wheezing, a lot of the flowers that are making you sneeze and wheeze when that pollen gets in the air are these ones that are around you. And so if the bees are bringing back the nectar or the treats from visiting those flowers, then the honey that they're going to give you may also be helping you to have less allergic reactions during certain periods of time.
Yeah, that's been something that's been coming up a lot more lately, too, is that local honey can really help with your allergies.
Yeah, honey is the product or has pollen inside of it, especially if it's local honey and it's been cold processed. That's one of the other things to kind of talk about is, really the best honey you can get is the honey that you can get that's close to you, but also the best honey you get is something that you probably get from a farmer's market, not from a store. We've got a huge problem of honey dumping that's in this country, and it's very difficult to try and find a way around it for legislators to act upon because the lobbyists that want the honey cheap have a better say than us beekeepers that are trying to just make a buck or make a living. If you think about all the products in your stores that are made with honey, the honey cereals, the honey butter, the honey alcohol, the honey beer, the honey everything, there's just not enough honey made in the world to cover all of these products. So they're bringing in stuff that has beet sugar or different types of sugar flavorings that aren't as healthy as what you've got coming out of a real beehive in a real backyard or a real situation. And unfortunately, we don't make up that kind of large volume. So you'll mainly see them in farmers markets and places like that.
So for those who are maybe out in a rural area and want to bring in bees, what would you suggest that they do to prepare to have enough food for those bees in their garden? What do they really need?
Good question. They need a bunch of little things. They need the right kind of weather. So today we had a big rainstorm come through, and we've been having a few of them, and they've been kind of unusual in that they seem to dump a lot of rain in a very short amount of time. So it doesn't necessarily permeate the ground as well. So what you need is a thriving food resource. So that's your plants, right? And so it's important to think about the plants that are around in your neighborhood. And a honeybee can travel up to 5 miles away from home, even up to 9 miles, but they'll basically own about 2 to 5 miles away from home, as if they were as if you were in your grocery store. If you were looking for a loaf of bread that you were assigned to get and you went in, you knew in your store aisle six, halfway down, was the piece of bread or the loaf of bread. If that wasn't there, you'd have to go to another store in another area where you're not sure. So you'd be wandering the aisles looking for the bread aisle, looking for the loaf of bread to try and see what's up. That's the same thing that happens with bees. If they're assigned honeybees, or if they're assigned to go to a place to get a particular flavor or crop, which is what the bees kind of do, they'll go to that place and dedicate to that bloom until it's done. And if they can't find it, they'll look further to try and find more. So it's important if you're assessing, does my yard seem like the right yard, is to maybe go to Google Maps, take a look around, or take a drive around the neighborhood and see what you see that has flowers. The important thing to remember is trees are 2-acre plots in the sky that just have a trunk. We forget about these things, but honey locusts and linden trees and so many maple trees and things make terrific flows of honey. And so if you've got a lot of them around in your neighborhood, you'll have plenty of food for the bees to work with. The other thing that's really important is to think about what's the late season and early season bloom. So late season bloom, we've been having very difficult winters that don't show up until January, right? We have a snowstorm on Thanksgiving, and then it's nothing until after Christmas. And during that time, it's warmer than it's supposed to be, or at least it has been. So the bees aren't necessarily clustering up and protecting mom. They're actually going out and looking for something that isn't there. So they come home hungry and eat their insulation, eat their honey, right? So it's important for us to have enough food around for them now in this season when they really need to start to store up.
Well, so I think what we've learned here is you definitely need to know what you're doing before you just go off and start buying stuff for bees. And one of those places is your local bee clubs. So, yep, okay,
Yeah, we do
wonderful.
meetings. We do free meetings every first Monday of the month. This Monday is Labor Day, so we're not doing one this month, but we're doing that.
Excellent. All right. Well, we want to thank you, Charlie. Charlie Keenan has joined us. He is president of the Milwaukee Waukesha Beekeepers Association, also executive director of Beevangelist. So if you're interested, look those up. We'll have links on our website. Charlie, thank you for being with us. I'm sure we'll check in again just to see how the bees are doing. Thank you for being with us. Thank you to Jeff Robbins for being on the board and for Claire Neipert for answering the phones for us today. And thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week.